welcome to another edition of View from the Bleachers Radio. I am your host, Joe Aiello, and today I'm joined by just Sean Powell. And Sean, we are minus Josh today. He is on assignment, not in Sochi, but with his real-life job, and so you and I are just on our own tonight.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think we'll be just fine. We don't need Josh anyways. We've got a stat of the week to talk about later on, and I think that'll be a little bit of a joke, and that'll be fun. In the meantime, just wanted to thank everyone that has gone to the website and left comments on the show as well as on iTunes, given us some positive ratings and also some reviews as well. We really, really, really appreciate those. Don't feel like you have to do it, but it would certainly be appreciated, and it would help get us to the point where we want to be able to be on the iTunes rankings. So if you get a chance, take a minute while you're listening, go to iTunes, click rate and review, and you can review the podcast right there. You can also follow us on Twitter. I am at VFTB. It's the acronym for View from the Bleachers. Sean is at Powell_Sean, and that's Sean spelled S-E-A-N. And you can find Josh at JCStats as well. You can also email the show, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We are a little bit sans some mailbag questions, so you guys have an assignment. Get us some mailbag questions over the course of these next few days so we can use them on next week's show. We also did talk about a prize that we're running or giving away out in this month, and that is a couple of different things. One is a DVD about the 100 years of Wrigley Field, and another one is a new book by George Will. We have a total of 8 prizes to give away this at the end of this month, and so far, not even 8 entries, so shame on you guys. But what that means for you as a listener, it means that there's a good chance that if you go ahead and rate and review us or do the things that you need to do, you can still get entered. So far we've got 3 entrants, and how do you get entered? What you're going to need to do when the show is over, after you're done listening, go to viewfromthebleachers.com, click on episode 6 of the podcast. You'll see it right there. And then in that post, there will be a link for you to click that says enter the contest. All you need to do is click enter the contest, send out the tweet that we've got preloaded for you that'll tell all of your followers about the podcast, and you will be entered for a chance to win. We'll go ahead and make sure that your favorite is your tweet is saved, and you will be entered into our contest. Remember, you can do that at least once a day, and you'll be entered each time. So feel free to go ahead and do that. We would really, really, really appreciate it. Sean, let's get started, man. We are about a week and a half now into spring training games, and is there anything off the top of your head that just stands out?
Well, I think the thing that I've been looking at on these games, besides just seeing the prospects that we know aren't going to start the year, just hit long home runs and follow their at-bats, which is always fun. But the player I've been really trying to keep tabs on is Mike Olt, and we've talked about him on all the podcasts recently and about how, you know, I think we want to see him really do well, take that third base job, and I know the front office wants to. And the thing we've been noticing is he's yet to play third. He started again today at first. So the good thing is he's getting tons of at-bats and tons of playing time. So obviously they're giving him the opportunities at the plate to show what he can do. But he hasn't played third yet, and we know that's due to that shoulder soreness issue that he had. So he must not be really ready to be in the game. But on the other hand, I'm not too worried because he's always been really highly regarded as a fielder at third. So I think if the bat's there, as long as he can get, you know, a game or two in spring training before the season starts, I think he'll be okay. So I'm really encouraged to see Mike Olt at the plate, getting that playing time, and they're giving him every opportunity to get that job.
Yeah, I was on ESPN Radio earlier this afternoon talking about Olt, and I think that the job, ultimately, if he can do anything at the plate, is his to lose, despite what we've heard over the course of the media. But I think you're exactly right. I don't think you need to worry about the fact that he hasn't played third so far this spring. I don't think that was the question. It was really just a matter of, has the vision cleared up? Has the at-bats come for him to where he can feel comfortable at the plate? And I think we're seeing those at-bats, whether they're at first base or DH. So for me, it's all about the hitting for Mike Olt. I'm not worried about the fielding. And my question to you then would be, what do we do with Olt if for some reason he just doesn't hit? Do you stick him in AAA? And then at that point, what do you do if he doesn't hit there?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's obviously your nightmare scenario. I think there's some people who still think that he's going to start at AAA. I mean, I actually think he has a great shot to start with the big league club. But But if he starts a AAA, that's not the end of the world. I read some speculation today that if he does start at AAA, it actually might be at first base rather than third, because they don't want to block Christian Villanueva, who's right. slated to be your starting third baseman at in Iowa, who's a great, amazing prospect in his own right. And if, you know, if Olds Glove's not a concern, the reps aren't that big of a deal for him. And that way you could have Bryant at AA at third and Villanueva at AAA at third. And that's actually really exciting. Think about those three guys in the minors as third base prospects, when for so many years after between Santo and Aramis, you had such a hole there. So that's a pretty exciting future. We know they're all three not going to be playing for the team in the future, but they're all assets, if nothing else. So, yeah, I mean, if he doesn't hit, maybe he starts at AAA. I think he's hit enough already to show that his vision problems aren't going to be a big major deal. He just might be more rusty than anything else. If he goes down to AAA and doesn't hit, man, you just got to say that, you know, if you look back on it, he was just one of the pieces in the Matt Garza trade to Texas. And at the time, he was almost like an afterthought in the deal, which if you look at it from, you know, C.J. Edwards also came over from that deal and a couple other guys. What a deal that looks like for the Cubs looking back at it, because, you know, the Rangers only got a couple of months of Garza and he's not there anymore. And we have all these prospects in return. So what a great steal for the Cubs. So if he doesn't hit, it's not the end of the world. He was just one piece in a trade for a player we weren't going to keep anyway. So you hate to see that, and especially for him, because I'm rooting for him so much, you hate to see that. But it wouldn't really set us back as an organization. We have so much depth at third right now.
Right, I agree with you. And I think you hit the nail on the head where if he does go down to AAA, the concept of not blocking anybody that is progressively moving through the system in Villanueva, I think is key. You know, because if you've had your chance, you've been at the major league level, you've been at the AAA level, and you're not getting the job done, at that point you've got to move away and move aside, kind of like Josh Vitters had to do, and make room for somebody else. And if you can still make some progress at another position, great. If not, it is what it is. So I think it'll be interesting. I think we'll see a little bit more. I think you can kind of be able to tell what we're going to see from Olt as we get closer to about the end of next week. I think give him another week and a half or so, and I think we'll pretty much have an idea where we're looking at there with about a week to go in camp and whether or not he's going to make this team. I don't think it's going to come down to the wire, do you?
No, I don't think so. And I mean, besides just the fact that, you know, he's shown he's a quality player in the past, they're giving him all these at-bats, and the fact that if he made the third base, he made third base on the major league team coming out of camp, it just sets up your minor league system so well. I mean, he's going to be giving every opportunity, so I really think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. Last week we talked a little bit about the roster, and we had pretty much given a couple of guys some automatic entrance to the opening day roster, but we had about six spots that we left unfilled. We kind of filled them in, but didn't really write them in ink, just wrote them in pencil at this point. And so those guys that weren't quite set in stone yet were Blake Parker, Wesley Wright, and Justin Grimm in the bullpen, and then also on the bench, Josh Vitters, Emilio Bonifacio, and Luis Valbuena. Is there anything over the course of this week that we've seen that would make you want to change any of those names?
Well, you know, the more I see and read about Justin Grimm, the more I like him. I mean, I Theo last week on the spring training broadcast was talking about Grimm's stuff and how he's the word electric and he's got multiple pitches that are out pitches. He can hit 97 on the gun. So he's got a lot of, I think, an inside track to make the team. There's been talk that maybe he could be a starter, but I think he could be an impact guy out of the bullpen. Another guy we didn't really mention too much last week was Alberto Cabrera, who's a talented guy. And one of the big factors with him is he's out of options. So, you know, if they're on the fence about someone, let's say Blake Parker or Cabrera, that could push that, it could push their decision over to Cabrera just because he's out of options and they don't want to lose him. So unfortunately, that may mean that somebody like Parker or Rondon or someone gets left out just because of that issue.
Right, right. You know, as we sit here and record this, I'm watching a cardinal bump into my window. I've got a glass door window to lead onto the deck, and this dumb bird continues to just fly right into the window. He always does it.
Reason to hate Cardinals.
Well, that's what I'm about to get to, is just the fact that Cardinals are just dumb. Like, yeah. What is wrong with them? I mean, you run into the same door every day, all day, and you still have not figured out that that's not an entrance.
Yeah, and they spell morons with an A, right?
However you want to spell it. So moving on a little bit to the bench, you had mentioned when we talked off the air a little bit that you had a little bit of changes that you wanted to make to our fifth outfield spot. We had kind of listed Josh Vitters in that spot, but you kind of have some different opinion now.
Yeah, you know, for a while, Josh Vitters maybe, but I think last week I mentioned that Darnell McDonald would, if my arm was twisted and I had to pick someone today, it would be him, just because of the veteran presence on a young team, and they like him as a, you know, coach on the field type guy. But the more I see games and listen to games on the radio and see the starting lineups, Ryan Kalish is getting a lot of starts, and he started in center today. He's got a lot of at-bats, and he's someone, if you're, the listeners aren't familiar with Ryan Kalish, he was drafted by Theo and Jason McLeod back when they were with the Red Sox organization. So they obviously liked the kid, his potential back then, and they picked him up after he was a roster casualty from the Red Sox. He's a really talented guy. He's had some major league experience, but he had a neck, like, vertebrae issue. He dove for a ball, had an injury, and he had surgery from the same guy who did Peyton Manning's neck repair. So he's had those issues that have really set him back a lot, and that's why the Red Sox couldn't keep him on the 40-man. But, you know, if he's healthy again and he's been working really hard to get back to form and the front office believes in him, they may want to give this guy a shot at the fifth outfielder spot. So I think if I had to pick today, I would choose Ryan Kalish just based on the fact they seem to be giving him the opportunity in the lineup.
Interesting. Yeah, if you look at the numbers, and I don't know if these spring training stats on Cubs.com are updated through today's game yet, but it's really the battle of who could care less when it comes to the outfield. Chris Coughlin has, you know, performed horribly. You know, 2 hits and 16 at-bats. And again, you have to take that with a grain of salt from a sample size standpoint, but, you know, hasn't really done anything. Nate Shearholz has been okay, just average. You know, you got Cunningham hasn't done anything. Junior Lake hasn't done anything. Justin Ruggiano is the only guy seeming to play for everybody. He's hitting the cover off the ball. But yeah. Ryan Sweeney's hitting under 100. Ryan Kalish, the guy you mentioned, hitting under 200. I don't know if that was updated as of today. Wells is hitting under 100. So all these guys that are potentials, Darnell McDonald, they're all terrible so far this year in spring training. And then you got a guy like Josh Vitters, who we had elected as our fifth guy, who's only seen 8 at-bats in spring. And if you look at him on Cubs.com, he's still listed as a third baseman. So
yeah, you know, Joe, and that's another, I think, piece of evidence that we can sort of point to say it doesn't look like they're really giving Vitters much of an opportunity to win a gig. It doesn't seem like he's much of the plans of this front office for this team this year.
Right.
I don't see that at all. And, of course, Sweeney had yesterday came out with like a slight injury. They hope it's not much, and we hope it isn't much of anything, but no matter what, you pointed it out, and we talked about this last week, this outfield, no matter who gets the five spots, is not going to strike fear in the hearts of any opponent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely the weak spot of this team, and I think the outfield is what you can point to first to say why this team's not going to even sniff 500.
Right.
To me, that's the number one issue. Look at that outfield.
Yeah, I think the outfield is the biggest weakness right now. I mean, we may be surprised. Junior Lake may turn into the guy that we hope he can be, and Nate Shearholz may catch lightning in a bottle before being traded. But you're right. Other than that, you know, aside from somebody coming in or coming up, the outfield is not good, and I don't think you can expect it to be good. We also looked at the bench spots in the infield, and Emilio Bonifacio was one of the guys that was slated to make our roster, and you know, what do you think? Do you still think Bonifacio makes this team, despite the fact that Starlin Castro is going to be coming back in the next couple weeks? You know, what do you think about Bonifacio? Has he done enough to show you that he's worthy so far of a spot?
Totally. I think Bonifacio is – I would be shocked, I'll put it that way, if he doesn't make this team. I think not only are they giving him tons of at-bats, tons of leadoff plate appearances – They're playing him all over the field, outfield, infield, so he shows his versatility. He brings some things to the lineup that we don't have. He has great speed, stolen base ability. You know, he's got that threat on the base pass. Obviously a good athlete. But there's stories that came out that he's already assuming a leadership role within the clubhouse.
I saw that.
Other guys are looking up to him. He's a natural leader. Everyone likes him. I mean, that's sort of your, you know, quotes intangible that I think it's important to have from a guy on a team, especially a young team like this. It's going to struggle this year, and you need somebody that's a leader to get young players through the hard times.
Right.
So I would be completely surprised if this guy's not on the roster to start the year.
Well, here's my question then, and I may be putting you on the spot a little bit, but if obviously for those who don't know, Bonifacio is not on the 40-man roster. So for him to make this team, he would need to get a spot on the 40-man roster, which means somebody has to go. And the way that they can go off that roster is a couple of different ways. Either they're traded, they're released, or they are placed on the 60-day DL, which basically opens up a spot on the 40-man roster. I don't see anybody that stands out that would be 60-day DL worthy at this point unless something happens. So let's just assume that Bonifacio gets the spot. Is there anybody that stands out to you that would be a guy, basically a 40-man roster casualty to open up a spot for Bonifacio? Because when I look at the outfielders, while they're not any good, they're not anybody that would clear waivers or that you would just want to simply let go. Then I looked at the infielders, and essentially it's the same thing. I don't see anybody there that would clear through waivers that would be basically just a filler on this 40-man roster. And obviously you're not going to drop one of your two catchers. So the name would probably have to be a pitcher. And really the only name that stood out to me would be James McDonald. Is there somebody I'm missing?
I don't have it in front of me. Is Donnie Murphy on the 40-man?
Donnie Murphy is on the 40-man
roster.
Yeah,
so I think that would be the logical choice. I mean, he's kind of your utility infielder type like Bonifacio is, and I don't think you can afford to have Barney and Valbuena and Murphy and Bonifacio. That's just too many guys that kind of do similar things. So I think if you're going to make that choice, it seems like Murphy. I mean, Murphy... Surprisingly, if you look at the stats, Murphy and Valbuena combined to do a really good job at third last year from an offensive perspective. But, you know, are you going to count on Donnie Murphy to do that every year? No. And, you know, Bonifacio gives you elements, like I mentioned before, with the speed and the leadoff type hitter attributes that Murphy just can't replicate. So I think that seems like the logical choice for me.
Well, I was trying to stay away from Donnie Murphy because, as you know, today is Donnie Murphy's birthday.
Oh, sorry, Donnie. That's a bad birthday present.
I didn't want to bring the dude down on his birthday. I'm sure he's an avid listener of the podcast, and so I figured we didn't want to hurt his feelings. But Donnie Murphy, now that I look at it, probably would be the casualty. And I think, essentially, if you placed him on waivers, you would probably run the risk of losing him.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It is what it is. But I think you're right.
If your hopes hinge on whether Donnie Murphy's picked up off waivers, you're in bad shape anyway, right?
Right. I mean, he's 31 years old, so it's not like you're building your future around Donnie Murphy. You can lose him if you have to, especially if you believe that Bonifacio can give you the kind of spark that you need in the infield and give you the utility depth that he can bring as well.
Yeah, the great thing is he can play outfield also, which is such a big bonus for him.
Yep, yep. I think at this point, though, ideally you'd like to see it kind of sort itself out and maybe one of the pitchers. I'm not a big fan of James McDonald. I don't think he's going to do well with this team, and I think he's going to end up not making the team. And then it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. That's my pick of who I think ends up being the guy that's gone. But
yeah, McDonald has done nothing that would warrant anybody rooting for him at the moment. He's not looked good this spring, and I was surprised. I'm sure you were too, Joe, that he got a major league deal rather than a minor league deal.
Yeah.
I guess that's what it took to get him so cheap, but that kind of took me back a little bit.
Well, it was originally reported as it was a minor league deal, and then it took forever for him and Hamill's signings to actually be announced formally, and then when they were, we got word that both Hamill and McDonald were guaranteed deals.
Yeah, and you know, I think the reports were McDonald was a minor league deal just because everyone assumed, yeah, of course that's a minor league deal.
Yeah.
Now, why would you give him major league? And then it came out, and I think almost everybody was kind of surprised by that.
Well, and what surprised me the most was shortly after that, Paul Mahalom signed for next to nothing, not very much more than McDonald got. And personally, I would have rather had Paul Mahalom back.
Yeah, I think we talked about it a few podcasts ago. I just don't think he wants the Cubs back because he knows he's a flip guy again. I don't think he wants to do that again.
Right, and I don't blame him. Moving on to injury news, Starlin Castro is set to resume baseball activities this week. Could be back as quick as tomorrow, and then back in Cactus Leaf games by this weekend is what Kerry Muscat was reporting earlier on his blog. So that's good to see. And then also I saw James Russell is just about ready to come back as well. He hasn't been pitching so far this spring training, just having some arm soreness and just dead arm. And you know, I think that that's expected, as the fact that the guy's pitched like 4,000 innings over the course of the last 2 years. And so, you know, I don't know really what the Cubs are expecting when you're running a guy out there 70 or 80 times in a season. That can be expected. So,
well, that's the key. I think that's the real – it was such an important thing to get a second lefty for the bullpen this year. And as Theo said, you know, we're going to have at least two lefties. It's probably going to be Wesley Wright, although – I suppose Chris Russin can be the other guy if it came to it, but I think Wright was signed for that express purpose. And yeah, I mean, it seems like Russell, every time you turn the TV, it was James Russell pitching for the Cubs. And you got to have those two lefties is just vital, because if every time you need a lefty, it's the same guy over and over. He's going to pitch almost every night.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And, you know, I kind of liken it to you. I don't know if you remember a guy. There was a guy that pitched for the Reds. Last name was Williamson. I think it was Scott Williamson. Do you remember Scott Williamson? And this guy had like a rubber arm. I'm Googling it to see if I'm misspeaking. It was probably in the mid or late 90s for the Reds. And I'm looking him up now. He was a reliever. Yeah. So the first year he pitched at age 23, as a reliever, he won 12 games. He had in 62 innings, he pitched 62 games. He pitched 93 innings, and then the next year, at age 24, he made 48 games pitched, 10 of them were starts, but 112 innings. And by that time, that guy was pretty much done. I mean, he pitched sporadically after that, but overall, his career wasn't the same as those first 2 years, where he won the Rookie of the Year for the Reds in '99. And just, he wasn't the same after that. He actually, I don't know if you remember, he pitched for the Cubs briefly in 05 and then in 06.
Right.
But Scott Williamson was a guy that, you know, you use him so much, and eventually the arm is going to burn out. And I think that James Russell, I'm glad to see that they weren't rushing him, that they just said, hey, take your time, you know, get the arm strength back, whatever you need to do. And I would be fine if he even started the season on the DL. If you need to rest a little bit, you know, you're a vital piece here, whether it's a vital piece in a trade or a vital piece in this pen if we're competitive next year. So I'm fine with him resting a little bit and just getting him to where he needs to be. I look at him a lot like Sean Marshall was in our pen.
Yeah. You know, I hope I'm wrong, but I sort of thought at the time, at the end of the season, that we sort of missed a sell high opportunity on James Russell when we didn't trade him last year, because after using him so much, I just don't know. I mean, we may have seen his peak last year. He did a great job. Hopefully he's still got some left in him, but I think we sort of had a sell high opportunity last year and just didn't get it done, which is unfortunate. He sort of reminds me too of, like, speaking of 1990s middle relievers, of a guy on the Cubs, Paul Ossenmacher. Remember him?
Yep, I do.
It seems like he pitched every game, and he was like every left-handed, and he's got a great name too, so I always think about that guy.
Yeah, I think bullpen guys remind me a lot of running backs, where you just use the crap out of them until they're dead, and then you just recycle.
Once you decide they're not a starter anymore, just run them into the ground until the next guy comes along.
And it's sad that's how it works out, because it's a lot like a running back. You get every last ounce out of them, and then you discard them, and it is what it is. And you don't pay them very good to begin with.
Right. Yeah.
But you know it. That's kind of what it is. I mean, if you don't have the skill to be a starter, you're left with, hey, do you want to pitch in the league? Great, this is how you get to do it. And you know, those guys are happy to make the money, but ultimately you don't plan on your career being very long.
Right. Unless you're Mariano Rivera.
Right. And I'm looking here at a note to go back to Mike Olt. Jesse Rogers has a post on his blog from earlier this afternoon that Olt is close to resuming play at third base. Scanning here doesn't say when he's planning on getting there, so apparently this is just a spring story that's made up here, basically just a filler.
Yeah, I know that we heard that last week too, and you know, but hopefully it actually really happens soon. But like you said, I think we agree we're not that worried as long as he's getting the at-bats and he's seeing the ball. I think that's the important thing.
Right. So we move on now to last week we started a series called Stat of the Week. And unfortunately, our statistician is gone today. So I jokingly said that we were going to cover a stat today. And the stat we're going to cover today is home runs. So if you don't know what
that's a great stat.
It's a great stat. And but if you don't know what home runs are, you really need to probably find a different podcast. But I joke, but I'm actually kind of serious about the home runs. And I'll tell you where I'm going with this a little bit. So a lot of times people will talk about the fact that home runs are, you know, just basically if you swing for the fences and you're a home run hitting team, you're going to probably win some games, lose some games, but you're probably not going to be an elite team. And so I took a look at last year's, home run leaders. I don't know and I wondered if you could give me the top five home run hitting teams of last year.
Oh, you're asking me like cold right now?
Yeah, I'm asking you cold call. Yeah, just
I won't look it up.
Yeah, don't look it up.
Talking major leagues?
Major league, yep. Top five, not players, teams.
So I would assume that most of those are in American League.
Yes.
In the top five, is there one? There's one in the National League, right?
Correct.
Okay. Detroit?
Detroit is not one of the top five from last
year. Oh, well, I already missed on my first guess. Okay, let's see. Blanking out here. Boston?
No.
Cubs?
No.
St. Louis?
No.
Angels?
No.
Rangers?
No.
I'm going to guess every...
All right, let me give you a hint on where...
Give me one of them.
Well, so here's where I'm going with this, okay? Out of the top five teams that were leading the league in home runs, how many of them would you say would be playoff teams? You would think.
Oh, at least three.
Okay. So here's your top five. Baltimore number one by and large.
Yeah.
And partly that was, you know, due to a certain gentleman that seemed to go off of his rocker.
Yep.
Seattle was number two. Oakland was number three. Toronto number four and Atlanta number five. The Cubs came in at number nine.
Right.
So what I took from that was a couple of things. One is you don't have to necessarily lead the league and have the most home runs to be a playoff team. If you look at the playoff teams, you got Boston, who was a team that you missed. Now, they did just miss it. They were number six.
Okay.
But Tampa Bay Rays, that would be another team. They were 11th in home runs, so they didn't hit a ton of home runs, but they still won 92 games. Detroit was another team that you mentioned. They were up there at number seven. Cleveland was a team that kind of snuck into the playoffs. A lot of times, a lot of people didn't think that they would make it, but they went on a hot streak towards the end, snuck in there. Cleveland was 10. And then you've got Oakland, who was, we already said, number three. And then you've got St. Louis, who made it. St. Louis was, they were 27th in home runs. Right. Pittsburgh made it. Pittsburgh was way near the middle of the pack at 14. And then you've got Cincinnati that made it. Cincinnati, again, 17, middle of the pack. And then the Dodgers. And the Dodgers made it. They were 24. So what I think we see, or at least I think we saw in the National League, was teams that won didn't necessarily overpower you with the bat. You know, they got, I think those teams in particular, you know, St. Louis and the Dodgers, they got good pitching. And they just did what they needed to do to win. They didn't necessarily just bash the home runs. And my guess, and I haven't looked this up, but my guess is you would probably see those teams that didn't necessarily hit a lot of home runs probably hit a lot of doubles, probably hit a lot of triples, probably drew a lot of walks. They probably did the other things that they needed to do to score runs that wasn't just tied around home runs. So where am I going with that? Where I'm going with that is this is just yet another reason why the Cubs can finish 500 in 2014, because even though they don't have the big boppers, maybe we can get the timely hits. Maybe Rizzo starts using all fields and hitting more doubles. Starlin Castro returns to form, starts hitting the ball all over the field, doubles, triples, and all of a sudden this team that doesn't look to have a whole lot of power maybe starts to score some runs.
Right. Weren't the Cubs second in the NL though in home runs?
The Cubs were right up there in home runs last year, but you got to remember that last year they had
Soriano
in the lineup, where they don't have that now.
Right.
They had the mighty bat of David DeJesus in the lineup.
That's true. But yeah, you know, and I was, as you were talking about the home runs, and we're getting off stat of the week a little bit, but I just looked up, just out of curiosity, team slugging percentage leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of goes to the fact that slugging and on base might be more valuable, because if I look at the top 10, just about all the top 10 were
playoffs.
And the world champion Red Sox were by far and away the leader in slugging percentage.
Yep, yep.
So, yeah, we can save that for another stat of the week, but that's just interesting to think about it. Because you're talking about extra base power, not necessarily just home run power.
Right, and then when you look at that, that's where the Cubs, yeah, they were right up there near in the home runs, but 17th in slugging percentage as a team. And so I would almost guess that as a team they were even lower than that if you factor out the pitchers. Because the Cubs had a pretty darn good hitting team from a pitcher standpoint.
Yeah, Travis Wood was like, when he started, he was like probably the third best hitter on the team, which is pretty sad, but he's right up there.
Yeah, and so that actually has me curious. So the Cubs, from a slugging standpoint as a pitcher, were ranked third. They had the third highest pitching slugging. Kansas City was first by a large margin, actually, over the Cubs. They were about 60 points ahead. So I don't know. It sounded like a dumb stat, but I think that home runs nowadays, with post PEDs or post PEDs, I think they just tend to. I think we're seeing a lot more return to smart baseball, not necessarily small ball or any of that stuff, but smart baseball, knowing what the situation calls for, and if it calls for going the other way with the ball and just hitting the ball to the opposite field to just get a single instead of a long home run, not necessarily a long home run, but swinging for the long home run. I think teams that know how to do those things are tending to win games. Teams that can get extra base hits and not necessarily focus only on the home run are winning games. And I think that's at least some encouragement to me that, yes, we may not have a lot of power in our lineup, but that doesn't mean that we can't be competitive.
Right. And, yeah, I know what you mean. And sorry to keep doing this, but I just looked up team on base percentage. And it's a lot of the same. All the playoff teams are up there at the top. And again, the Boston Red Sox led the majors in on base.
Mm-hmm.
So they led in slugging and on base, and they have the World Series trophy in their offices right now. So that is something to think about. And we know who used to run that team and built a lot of that roster. So that's pretty encouraging.
Well, I would venture a guess, and I'm going to look to see. I would venture a guess that the Red Sox, and this is a stat that I'm actually fairly into, is I would guess that pitches per plate appearance, I would venture a guess that the Red Sox or the Yankees are probably first in that spot. And I'm looking to see, and I don't see it on the ESPN sortable team stats, but I know it's probably up there from an individual standpoint. But, just making the pitcher work, because if you can get into the bullpen at that point, the earlier you can get into the bullpen, especially the earlier you can get into the bullpen in a series, the more success you're going to have overall. And so I think as this team looks to be competitive as we wait for some of our guys like Baez and Bryant that can provide the power, just focusing on hitting the ball to opposite fields, using all parts of the ballpark, and just focusing on those singles, doubles, triples, and just beating those down over and over and over and not stressing over the home runs, because the home runs aren't going to be there for this team this year.
Right, and I didn't find the team leaders, but I did find that five Boston Red Sox players were in the top 52 in the majors for most pitches per plate appearance.
Exactly. And so just making the pitcher work.
And that's part of the whole Cubs way. Yeah, and that's what people criticize Joey Votto for, that want to see him swing the bat more. But, I mean, geez, he's one of the best hitters in the league, at first base. And he sees a lot of pitches. He's patient. He doesn't swing except for a ball that he can drive, and if you don't give him that ball, he'll take the base.
Right, right. And I think that's the key. It's just, there's a lot of different ways to win a baseball game, and it's just a matter of figuring out what works, what works for your team, and what do you think would be the most, how would I phrase it? Basically, the most the best fit for your team based on what your roster is. If you've got a team that doesn't have a lot of power, just standing back and waiting for the home run is not going to work for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I know exactly what you mean.
Gotcha. Well, that's going to do it for this show. We're going to skip the game this week, unfortunately. We don't have Josh, and it's just not the same when it's just the two of us. I had actually hoped to debut a new game called Fast Five this week, but we'll have to hold that on to next week. Just a reminder, make sure you tweet at us at VFTB, at Powell_Sean, and also follow us there as well. And then also make sure, again, that you go to the website, viewfromthebleachers.com, click on the show notes for Episode 6, click to enter the contest. We would really, really appreciate it, and we would be very grateful as a result. For Sean, I'm Joe, and that's going to do it for Episode 6. We'll see you next week.